they came to bury Caesar. In the spring of 1969, the funeral of Dwight David Eisenhower, the great wartime commander, Europe's liberator from Nazi occupation and America's two-term president, proved an irresistible draw to a generation of world leaders who owed their freedoms, fortunes, and in some cases their lives, to the soldier politician from Kansas. On March 30, millions of television viewers in the United States watched as a stately procession of crowned heads and dignitaries, including King Boudoir I of Belgium, King Constantine II of Greece, Grand Duke Jean of Luxembourg, Lord Louis Mountbatten of Great Britain, and President Ferdinand Marcos of the Philippines gathered in the Capitol Rotunda in Washington to pay their respects. Two faces in the pantheon of greats stood out. Onlookers were touched to see a stooped, 78-year-old President Charles de Gaulle of France shuffle forward to salute his wartime comrade's bier. The other statesman familiar to Americans was the Shah of Iran, the fabulously wealthy emperor whose lavish titles were matched only by his three brilliant marriages. Standing erect in elevator shoes, still trim at age 49, his hawkish features resolute, His Imperial Majesty Mohammad Reza Shah Pahlavi, King of Kings, Light of the Aryans, and Shadow of God, radiated the majesty of the fabled peacock throne and shouldered the weight of 2,500 years of Persian monarchy. Wearing a ribbon-slashed military tunic topped off with enough gold braid and orders of state to ornament a Christmas tree, the Shah looked for all the world as though he had just stepped out of a Habsburg drawing room at the Congress of Vienna. Mohammad Reza Shah's decision to attend Eisenhower's funeral was not driven by sentiment toward the man who intervened to save Iran's peacock throne in 1953. I pointed out that it will provide an ideal opportunity to meet the new American administration, and he agreed, wrote Asadollah Alam, the Shah's closest advisor and minister of the imperial court. Alam kept a series of secret diaries in which he recorded daily life at the Pahlavi court. Richard Nixon had been sworn in as America's 37th president less than 10 weeks earlier, and the Iranian king was anxious to reaffirm their long-standing acquaintance. If the Shah's Ruritanian splendor seemed misplaced in the year of Woodstock, the Apollo moon landing, and the Manson family murders, the empire of oil he had reigned over for 28 years made him the man of the moment in the Nixon White House. The Shah is clearly the most important person in Iran, the State Department advised President Nixon in 1969. By Iranian tradition, any Shah is a kind of Superman whose position and prerogatives have even mystical significance. This Shah adds to this tradition the weight of his enormous political sagacity, his intelligence and cunning, his ability to get things done as an executive. At Eisenhower's funeral, the Shah was treated as first among equals. His scheduled private meeting with the president ran over by a half hour. During the funeral ceremonies in the National Cathedral, the Shah was seated prominently in the front row beside Nixon's elder daughter, pretty blonde Tricia. Tricia's sister, Julie, had recently married David Eisenhower, Ike's grandson, and received from the Shah a stunning blue and maroon Persian rug as a wedding gift. At a glittering dinner the Nixons hosted for their foreign guests, it was the Shah and de Gaulle who stole the show, observed Alam. None of the others got a look in.